Welcome to Post Status Draft, the official podcast for Post Status, a website with news and information for WordPress professionals. Today, Brian Richards and I are talking about privacy, including the GDPR and other stuff that's been going on in the news around privacy and how it affects WordPress especially. There's a lot going on in terms of core development and enabling plugins and themes and whatnot. So we're going to dig into that. If you enjoy this podcast, you can get more quality news and analysis from the Post Status Club. Check out current club members, site partners, and join the club on our website at poststatus.com/club. Today, I'd like to feature one of our partners, and that is Valet. You can go to valet.io to learn more about them. They offer intelligent website services and digital support for professionals. If you need someone reliable to help you with your website for a continuing maintenance and consulting plan, Valet can do that for you. They include site management, personal care, migrations, audits, pretty much anything you need, including custom development. They also have Valet Metrics, which is a really neat product to help get a snapshot of your website's health. Thank you to Valet for being a Post Status partner. Now, here's our show. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Brian. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am also doing great. I'm excited to talk all about your privacy. Did you know—
My privacy specifically?
Your privacy specifically. Did you know that I've been tracking every single thing you do on my website every time you visit it?
You know, I did know that. But apparently a lot of people don't.
Yeah. The current outrage around all of the data that Facebook has been collecting for years would suggest that the common public hasn't ever really looked into modern advertising mechanics or, in general, what Facebook has been up to for years, which isn't, it's not unrealistic to expect that they wouldn't know any of that, but it is still surprising that so many people are so far out of touch with regards to how modern businesses operate.
Yeah, I got some flack because I mentioned on Twitter that I felt like it was obvious. And of course I was addressing web professionals, so I don't really know why I got a lot of flack about it, because people were telling me like, well, it's obvious to someone that understands the web. But, you know, I kind of question that a little bit, because if you're using the internet, like, everyone's been retargeted by ads. Like, this was not unobvious. Like, it's not a mystery. Like, you know, advertisers must have information and data on you. And the places where that's collected are places like Facebook and Google and Amazon. And they all have their ad networks that essentially work together as well. So, like, basic retargeting is common knowledge amongst people. So, I don't know why. It's been surprising in the news, but it is. So we're going to talk about privacy on a broad spectrum. Do you have any opening thoughts on that to counter or complement what I just mentioned?
I would say that for anybody who is ultra concerned about their privacy, their best mode of action is to just stay off the internet. There's a fantastic yeah. quote that I had heard years ago now, back when tech TV was a thing here in the US, where one of the shows had interviewed a spammer, and they're like, what should we do if we want to stop getting email from you? He's like, go to your computer, rip the cord out of the wall, and never turn it on again. That's going to be the only way that you'll never receive a piece of spam from anyone. Mm-hmm. And that has evolved, of course, to targeted ads. And really, the only way to be completely out of the loop is to just be completely off the internet, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. It's really impressed me that the whole concept of not trusting others with your basic personal data is pretty new. Because I think back to being a kid, and like, everybody's phone number and address was in the phone book on purpose, you know, like so that your neighborhood or city people could contact you, call your home phone, et cetera. And now we're loath to include our basic public information anywhere, because at some point, and this is not an invention of the web, but the web has surely taken it to a new level. At some point, people decided, hey, we can take use of this public information and advertise to people based on it. And that's
exactly,
you know, we've been getting junk mail for decades. And those addresses and that information came from somewhere. And everywhere you go and you shop, people ask for your email address, and then they incessantly email you their deals and whatnot. Like, none of this is very new, you know? And that's why the whole thing is kind of astounding to me, but it is what it is. And now we're facing a public outcry, a media environment around privacy. And it does cause us, and I do think this is for the better, it causes us to have a conversation about what we do think is important to be private information and what is okay to be public, and what kind of tracking is enough, or those types of questions. And there's even legislation at hand. So why don't we dig in a little bit to first discuss kind of the primary tools that are used for tracking, like if we talk about Facebook pixels and stuff like that. Do you want to give the basis of how that works and what's available to advertisers?
I do. Yeah. So for anybody who's been building websites anytime in the last decade, you are likely familiar with most of these because you've either guided your client to add them or they have requested explicitly to you to add them. And so there are analytics services like Google Analytics, where we add tracking scripts so that we can collect all kinds of information about visitors. And with those, it's largely anonymized. There are ones that are less anonymous, but for Google Analytics specifically, the data that you get has been stripped away of any identifying information.
At least other than location.
Right. You can't track it down to a specific person necessarily and say, I want to see every single thing that Brian Krogsgaard has done on my site. But I can see that in general, a male age 25 to 40 from Alabama in the United States has been on my site and has spent this much time across these specific pages and has clicked on these links. And we can then combine that with other data to de-anonymize it if we wanted. But we get data from analytics services. We can pass data to people like Facebook with what they call their tracking pixel. And that gives us an opportunity to market and advertise to them. Ad tracking scripts. So Google AdWords is a pretty big contender in this. And they own multiple services like DoubleClick Ads and things like those. And these are the biggest offenders for the most part, not necessarily Google's
the
ads.
The greatest utilized tools.
Yes.
That I would consider to be above board, if you will.
Right. Are the ones that advertisers use. And they're super sneaky because a lot of ads are interactive and therefore require JavaScript, which can then bring in all kinds of other sneaky tools with it, custom tools that they've rolled, and they can collect loads more data than people would expect. And the most underhanded ones may actively be reading other things on the page and can collect your name and email, and then they can know who you are no matter where you are on the web. And this is, I think, what has Facebook in the crosshairs of most of the public, is the Facebook tracking pixel is everywhere. So Facebook knows all kinds of things about you, not just what you're doing on Facebook, but what you're doing on other sites, regardless of whether you're a Facebook customer or not. And I say customer, I mean a Facebook user. And
people are using these scary words like shadow profiles and stuff for their non-logged in or non-registered users, because essentially they're assigning this data to an IP address or whatever. And, you know, that's freaking people out. But it's just creating a profile. Like, this is all pretty straightforward. And like you said, like Google Analytics, although less intrusive, has been doing this for a decade or whatever.
A few decades.
But that provides basic information to site owners and potential advertisers, and then you blend it all together. And that's created this outcry. But like you said, pretty much any website that does any form of marketing has the Facebook pixel installed, because it does give you a pretty outstanding profile of who your website audience is that you can then take to market, whether you're doing so for your own marketing or whatever else. Like if you're selling advertising and using that as your profile data that you can give to other advertisers or whatever.
Yep. And then we have a couple other instances, such as people who are doing split testing on their site. You need to track visitors just for that, so you know which version of the site to serve to them. And then we have more obvious means of collecting data, like newsletter subscriptions, comment forms, mm-hmm. and for e-commerce owners, your checkout form.
Yeah, and I do want to get into the potential dangers of this, but I will start out by noting that one thing this does is allow you to have more targeted and relevant ads. Like, there is a case for this being not a terrible thing, but there's also this idea that it can be creepy. Like,
right.
Someone can, you know, a business, just due to the behavior they've tracked from you, they can know things like you're pregnant or you're super interested in like a certain genre of goods or something. And that can be a little scary to people that don't understand just how useful that data can be. I'll also note, I haven't seen retailers in the crosshairs, but they do the same stuff based on your checkouts, your, you know, walking in their stores and what you order and connecting that to your physical mailing address and all these things. Like, I think the outrage over the internet component of it is what's weird.
I think it's also
targeting Facebook and Google, when this is any company that utilizes data in any fashion is trying to make use of that data for their making a profit on their goods and services.
Yep. I think it's also the sheer scale of it, right? It's
It
is surprising to fully realize how comprehensive a profile can be. You mentioned retailers, and Target, I think, is one U.S. store that got some flack not too long ago because they sent information to a person who was pregnant and no one else knew. And it was sort of revealing, like, you sent this to my daughter who didn't know it was pregnant, and now we all know that she's pregnant.
Yeah. On a less serious note, that happens too if like you buy a gift for your spouse or something. So let's say I bought my wife some boots a few years ago. If she logs into our Amazon, she sees all these like related boots things on Amazon. She's like, oh, so you've been looking at some boots, you know?
But for a single store, it doesn't seem so crazy, right? Because, well, of course, they're going to be collecting data about what I've bought. I signed up for their store, you know, discount card, so they know all the things that I'm making. And so every few weeks when I check out, I get a coupon printed out for something that I haven't bought in a while. I have I have a couple of friends who work at a local supermarket, and they specifically work in the department for sort of mining this data and figuring out what products should be placed closer together. What coupons should they serve to you at point of checkout for you to come back later and buy other things? But when we're talking about somebody like Facebook amassing all of this data, well, now they're selling that data, presumably, I think the reason that people are so upset, right? They're selling your data to advertisers. Which isn't exactly true, right? They're selling advertisers placements that target you. The advertiser isn't necessarily going to know, here's who I am and everything about me.
Right. For instance, and let's apply this a little more towards the web. So like I have a Facebook pixel on PostStatus, and if someone visits the club page on PostStatus, it puts them in a certain group, and then I can then target people that have looked at the club page for PostStatus on Facebook or Instagram, and I can target my ads so that it just visits them, and it excludes my customers because it tracks people that have converted on my website because my website data is hooked up to Facebook.
Yep.
So I can target potential customers, excluding existing customers if they're logged in or like have been logged in at some point, and other stuff like that. And that's well within their targeting. But that doesn't mean I know exactly who I'm targeting. You know, like I don't know that it's Scott Baskard. I say that because he sent me a link one time that was like, man, I've seen your ad like 20 times. And I was like, well, you've probably been visiting my website logged out.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes your advertising spend so much more relevant and useful and smaller mm-hmm. in some cases because you're not wasting money on people who are already customers.
Compared to like a direct mail equivalent of just like blasting an entire city with your advertisement for something that's only relevant to, you know, I don't know,
100 people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that some of the flack for Facebook is rightly placed in that unauthorized agents have gained access to this information because they have historically been rather flippant about who can see what data. When right. Facebook started out, their privacy controls were very poor. And lots of companies took advantage of this, such as Cambridge Analytica, and they built extremely comprehensive profiles on people on Facebook without Facebook's knowledge or consent. And that is where the crux of the issue lies. It's not that Facebook has been mining this data and building these profiles, but that other companies can indeed use this data for their own purposes.
Right. And a company like Facebook, they create these terms of services that no one will read, and they yes. give extreme latitude to what Facebook can collect, and you basically just agree with it because it's in your face.
And in your book too.
Yeah, so like and then they don't oh, your jokes. They don't lay it out clearly, hey, this is the type of stuff that is now available to our partners and things like that. And I think these companies could make it easier if they were just more straightforward about what they're able to do, and rather than making it a mysterious black box and whatnot. And maybe that's part of what we're finding out. Like most people, myself included, I didn't know how available it was, but like Google has this whole page that's like, what do we know about you? And you can scroll through and see like everything Google's tracked about you. Now, advertisers can't see that, but it's stuff Google has on your profile.
Right.
And you can just scroll for, you know, hundreds of pages, and they show you everything they know about like where you've been and what you've seen, what you've visited, who you've emailed, like all these different things. I didn't really dig into it too much. I just looked at it briefly. And that's based on what you agree to let them track.
Yeah.
And it can be pretty staggering the first time you see it if you never realized that was going on.
And you say where you've been, not just on the internet, but physically. Where have you been in the world? They have, if you're a Google Maps user at all or have an Android device and are sharing that data with Google, which you probably are, they can know where you've been and how long you've been at those places and all sorts of other interesting information.
Mm-hmm.
And it is simultaneously cool and creepy. It's something that I've actually wanted. Like I've wanted sort of passive location tracking for myself so I can see, you know, what places do I frequent most often? And what was the name of that one restaurant we were at that one time in that one city? And chances are Google can feed that to you if you know where to look and how to look it up. They have a site dedicated just so you can view your travels and things like that.
Yeah.
But what you said at the onset of this, you know, I think if companies were more clear, right, less opaque about, or more If they're more clear about what sort of things they're tracking about you and providing that intel to you, I think a number of legislators in the European Union would agree with you. And in fact, they went about the task of getting companies to be more clear about what they're tracking. And that's what brings us to the General Data Protection Regulation, or the GDPR, that's going into effect this May 25th, 2018.
Yeah, and this is causing, because of what the legislation requires, it's causing a serious amount of changes to the way data is handled online, and it's basically affecting it for everyone, because even though it's the EU, it's affecting anyone that has any presence to people from the EU, so therefore pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
So Google, Facebook, any software company or whatever is essentially making adjustments for that, and so is open source software like WordPress to be compliant. Anyway, so do you want to dig into a little bit about what the legislation does?
Yeah, I say we cover that real quickly, and then we jump right into what it means for us in WordPress.
For WordPress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in general, the GDPR has a few specific sort of guidelines for how this regulation works. It applies, as we've already said, to any organization globally that offers goods or services to EU residents and collects data about them. And this is important because while it's unlikely the EU is going to chase down your small site and fine you or anything else like that, they could very well interrupt your services to residents in the EU. Mm-hmm. And the personal data that they're referring to is any data that can be linked to a person. So even anonymized data that you're collecting, say from Google Analytics, that when combined with other data you're collecting can now be linked to a specific individual. And one major change to this is that consent must be obtained from your visitors before any data is collected, which means that if you are doing something where you're running an ad, you cannot show those ads that have been targeted until you have been given explicit permission from the visitors. And along with this, they require that consent must be easy to withdraw. So just as easy as they say, yes, I give you consent, they must be able to say, no, stop tracking me. And you have to respect that. And along with the data that you're collecting and along with making it easy for them to give and revoke consent, they also need to have the ability to access, transfer, correct, or erase their data at any time. So you have to give them the means to see the data that you're collecting, the ability to extract that data, transfer it, so download it so they have access to it permanently, to change your records so that it's correct, or to erase your records. So if someone could come and say, yes, I give you consent, and then they see everything, they can download it all, delete it all, and say, you can no longer track me. You have to be able to support all of that.
Yeah. And to be honest, that's an incredible burden.
That is an enormous burden.
You have to really want the data to even bother, in my opinion.
So this provides a lot of interesting changes, I think, to how we're going to operate. First, I think it's going to provide publishers with a much-needed foothold so they can provide some leverage against the advertisers, because it's going to be the publishers who are gathering this consent, right? Publishers who have already built rapport with their visitors, who then say, yes, I do want to allow you to collect information about me, or no, I don't. And so advertisers will need to get that consent from publishers, which I hope, if publishers play their cards right, gives them a little bit better control over what advertisers can do on the site. My hunch is, in reality, the advertisers are going to sort of coerce publishers to say, you need to show this and pipe all of the data directly to us, and advertisers will continue to do whatever it is they want to do.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know. That part interests me just because it may, has the potential at least to give a little bit of new power to publishers.
Yep.
But
the other thing that's interesting, though, is what you already said, is it's going to cause us as website owners and developers to seriously evaluate what data we're collecting and why we're collecting it. I'm mm-hmm. guilty of collecting tons of analytics data just in case I want to do something with it. And to date, I haven't used much of it, right? We slurp it all up thinking that maybe it'll be useful down the road and we'll want to have that retroactively for when we want to do something with it, but then we don't actually do anything with it. Or we're collecting data that we don't actually need, and then suddenly the U.S. government shows up to subpoena us for that information and we are compelled to give it to them, when instead, man, it would have been great for a certain company to not track all of the information about its users to then have to give them up so freely.
Yeah, I basically have done very little with the data that I collect. I just have the Facebook Pixel and Google Analytics because those are things that are good to have on a website for if you need that information, but I never look at it.
Yep.
I haven't changed the ads that I run on Facebook in like a year because they bill me like $10 a month because I'm targeting so few people because I have very, very narrow targeting allowances on there. Like I'm not targeting friends of friends or anything. I'm just targeting the individual that visits particular pages to show them an ad to join the club, and that's it. So if anything, I may just turn that off and then be done with it. But a lot of people aren't so lucky. You know, like if you run an e-commerce website where you rely on targeting people because they're, you know, I see a lot, like I follow some people that like make leather goods and like craft stuff on Instagram. And because I follow them, then I see ads about that stuff. So like now all my Instagram ads are these super targeted things for like, I don't know, like leather goods and crafty stuff and whatever you, various like hipster, they've targeted me as a 30-year-old person interested in like high quality goods. So like I get shoe ads and all these things that are like very targeted to a specific type of person. And those retailers, those sellers are very reliant on being able to target someone like me, whether they have my profile right or not. I'd argue they don't. But they think they do, and they've got it right for somebody that they're targeting. And that's an important audience for them to be able to address. And they have to make the decision of like, okay, are they going to pursue this information or not? And if they don't, then what's that mean?
Yeah.
In terms of their potential revenues and stuff.
Yeah. On my site, apart from analytics and the Facebook tracking pixel for retargeting like you, I collect practically no information from my customers. I collect the bare minimum that I need for them to have a membership on my site, which is their name and their email address, a password,
yeah,
and payment information. And that's
yeah,
it.
I was really impressed the way that you collect so little in terms of for new customers.
Yeah, I don't need to know where people live to sell digital goods, so I don't collect that, which did pose a bit of a problem when suddenly I was selling a t-shirt because I did need to get somebody's address. So I added a bit of extra tech so that if someone had the t-shirt in their cart, I would ask them for their shipping information. Otherwise, all I need is their name, their email address, and they need to provide a password and payment information, and that's it. And if they're watching a free session, they don't even need to provide any payment information. It's just name, email, password.
Yeah, and that, you know, especially for people from the EU, they can't necessarily do that because of VAT and other things, which gets into, you know, additional stuff. Like Americans don't have quite the same reporting duties that Europeans do.
Yep.
But for this GDPR stuff, it seems to be that non-EU audiences are paying close attention to it as well, and rightfully so.
Bingo.
We'll just have to see how that shakes out, because pretty much every layer in your business has to adopt and adjust to these rules. So that includes advertising networks to all the way down to content management systems to individual data you may collect because you choose to. Like, you have to be aware of what these rules are and then how to adjust to them. And that's that can be a significant educational process, I think. So I'm curious to see how that plays out in real life. I know when the EU came out with their VAT rules and how you were supposed to tax and like pay each member country, there was such an outrage because it was too demanding of the little guy, basically, that really cooled down. And basically nobody outside of the EU, I don't think, collects that information anymore because it was just too difficult. So I think this will be easier. It seems like a better thought out rule, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, nevertheless, in general, I think I like it, actually.
Yeah, I think I like it for the most part. I do think there's always unwanted consequences from regulation, but it doesn't mean regulation can't be a good thing. So it just depends on how it's structured, and I don't think we'll know fully until we see a little more. Nevertheless, WordPress is doing its part for giving people the tools to be GDPR compliant. There is a GDPR compliance tag on Make WordPress, and I want to dig into the WordPress components. But before we do, I'd like to thank our partner for this episode, which is Valet. Valet.io is where you can go. They do a lot of stuff at Valet. Like I said in the intro, they can do a migration for you. They can audit your website. They can probably help you with GDPR compliance if that's a thing that you need to do for your own website. They have a great deal of skills, an excellent team. So whether you're looking for custom development or if you're looking for monthly help, like a retainer or something like that, they have you covered. They also have a lot of tools they've built over the years to keep a constant audit of your website to make sure that things are working and running properly. And that's what they turned into Valet Metrics, so that now you can run that consistently and use that like a product. Their team, Kim Lipari, Mason James, and the rest of the team is really, really great. I've known them for years. I'm super happy to have them as a post-status partner. And if I understand correctly, they're pretty much always hiring. So if you're looking for a good gig in the WordPress landscape, you can check them out as well. Go to valet.io to learn more. And thank you so much to Valet for being a post-status partner. So let's get into the WordPress specific stuff, Brian. First of all, there's a lot going on. When you say it seems to be, other than Gutenberg, the primary development thing that we're tackling, huh?
Yeah. There's a ton that has to be unpacked for this, right? Because you said, or we talked about earlier, the burden that this adds for being able to appropriately deliver and show all of this data to visitors and allow them to opt in and opt out and everything else. And on make.wordpress.org, there's been a conversation surrounding core, and a roadmap has been proposed for tools to support GDPR compliance. And Andrew Oz posted this at the end of March, and there has been a lot of activity, not just here on make.org, but also on Track as well. There are, at present, 25 different Track issues surrounding GDPR.
Yeah, and those range from small things like help text or a checkbox on the comments box to make or give consent for cookies, to tools like helper functions, filters, stuff like that, for people to be able to set privacy pages, privacy policy pages, and other information that's more site specific. And it's really thorough and in depth. And interestingly, this has required a blend of user experience designers, developers, and legal consultants. So this has really brought in the professionals to put this whole agenda together. There's also the GitHub that's GDPR dash compliance, which is a great GitHub snag from a domain perspective. And within that, the reason I mention it is because there's a information repository that has, you know, all the frequently asked questions and, you know, a roadmap and these different things that if you have a plugin or a theme or you're doing consulting work and you need to know how to wrangle stuff for your clients, like there's a lot of stuff in here that can essentially give you the foundation educationally on what you need to know to be compliant and to help your clients be compliant. You're the purchasers of your plugins to be compliant. So that is super useful. And this whole thing, I think, is going to really trickle down. But there's not a lot of time, you know, like if the compliance has to be done soon, then this is something that we probably should have talked about earlier, but I'm glad we're talking about now, because if you're not paying attention, it's time to pay attention, I guess is what I would say.
For sure. Especially since you've only got about a month now to,
right,
to engage in becoming a compliant website.
So if you're a plugin maker, you should certainly be like in go mode right now.
Yes.
If you're a site owner, you should be able to get upstream adoption of a lot of these, but you may have plugins that aren't active anymore or aren't implementing any changes, and you might need to address that yourself, especially if you have a website with, you know, more, what do you call that, like exposure. So like you're a big deal. You're not like a little baby website nobody's going to go after. There's a lot to pay attention to here. Sorry, what were you going to say?
I was going to say that the tools that are being added to Core are very interesting to me, because it's going to be very complicated to solve at Core and get all of the different plugin authors who have been doing things their own way for so long to be on the same page.
Mm-hmm. You have anything specific you want to mention?
Well, one of the things that they're talking about adding to Core is tools specifically for generating the privacy policy. So selecting a specific page to be your privacy policy page, and then providing helper functions for getting that page URL, and also for dynamically adding things to that page as well, so that all these different plugins who are setting cookies and collecting data their own particular way can provide language on your privacy policy page for you automatically. Mm-hmm.
I think that one especially is fascinating too, because that's some legalese, you know, like you're appending something to someone's privacy page that's specific about your plugin. So one, the plugin owner needs to be cognizant of the markets where their plugin is installed. And then the site owner may have to give additional review to that information to be in keeping with their own compliance.
Yeah.
You know, standards. So, yeah.
And it may work
out. It's complicated.
That probably the easiest way in my mind for this to work is not for plugins to automatically modify your privacy policy page, although that would be a nice set it and forget it kind of approach, but more likely for them to provide to you intel on here's what we're tracking and how we're tracking it, so that you can edit your own privacy policy page. And also make informed decisions about whether or not you want to include the plugin or not. That's going to be a huge thing for like the plugin repository, for it to list, here's all of the additional user data that's being tracked. One thing I forgot to mention when we were giving the quick GDPR overview is that any notices that employ legalese or require visitors to provide information that's unrelated to the services that you're providing are actually invalid. So when you're providing this consent to people, or this opportunity for them to provide consent, if you're asking them for additional unrelated information at that point in time, or the way that you are phrasing what you're doing is too convoluted for them to understand, they can't really be held accountable for giving you consent because they didn't understand what they were doing at the time.
So basically it has to be done in a way that is understandable.
Right. So
the enforceability of that blows my mind, but
yeah,
okay.
So
that just increases the challenges, I guess, for the tool makers as well.
Maybe not. I think it's far easier to provide a non-legalese, you know, legal jargon written description of what your thing is doing. For example, I have an extension for WooCommerce that tracks customer browsing history. So from the moment they hit your site until the moment the transaction is completed, you can get a list of every page they viewed in order and how much time elapsed from the moment they hit that page until they went on to the next one. So you can very quickly see any time an order is completed by looking at the order details. Here's how long it took the customer to make the purchase decision, as well as the pages they looked at along the way. And here are the other purchases that they've made and their actual lifetime value across those purchases. And I built that for myself and then started selling it for others because I didn't want to have to mine a bunch of data in Google Analytics to figure out, in general, what pages are leading to purchase decisions, how long are people spending between when they arrive to when they eventually complete a checkout. And kind of forgot where I was going here. The legal description of what's going on, right? And so it's far easier for me to say, we are tracking all of the pages that you're viewing in order to determine which pages are most useful to a person's purchasing decision. It's a very simple sentence to articulate and for someone to understand versus, you know, making that a few paragraphs long and talking about the precise nature of what we're doing and how we're doing it and why you're legally compelled to allow me to do this.
Yeah. I have to say, like, maybe I'm just not as worried about privacy as some people. I hate going to websites and having to click those buttons, like giving approval for something. It drives me crazy. but I really don't know a way around it. So I guess it's just going to have to be our new normal. The whole thing fascinates me. Anyway, so I guess what we wanted to cover today are the basics of what you need to know, and to let people know, if they don't already, that WordPress is on top of this. And your plugins should be as well. So I guess if there are takeaways, it would be that if you have a plugin, especially if it's, you know, if it's doing any data collection, which a lot of plugins do, then you should probably check out and see what the plugin team is doing to wrangle this. And if they're not doing anything, then that's problematic and needs addressing. However, it seems to me so far that especially big plugin makers that do a lot of data collection, like, you know, even like in e-commerce and stuff like that, they're approaching this the right way and giving it the full effort. So that's good to see for sure. And in general, I think we'll learn a lot from this project. And if nothing else, it's been a fascinating look at seeing government and regulatory stuff collide with software development. And it's fascinating, if nothing else. And for this to be going into effect at the same time we're seeing all this stuff in the news about data analytics and stuff with Facebook and Google and others, it makes, for me, an interesting story. So I don't really have a whole lot else to say on it. I just thought we should give it our two cents here.
Yeah, I'd say we've given a lot more than that. Probably as much as $1.50. So for all of you who want to know more, we've got tons of links that are in the show notes for this, including...
And they're going to be more eloquent than we've been, for sure.
Yeah, details about the GDPR, how Core is responding, how web hosts and others are responding. So we've got a handful of links that are here that have also appeared in the footnotes of the Post Status Club newsletter.
There's a really good article from CJR, which is the Columbia Journalism. I don't know what the R stands for. It's the Columbia Journalism, like, publication. And they have a super in-depth, but it has a summary as well of exactly what is going on with the regulation itself and how it affects publishers specifically. So I think that's a really useful link worth reading. That helped me understand kind of the essentials of this whole thing. So check that out. And then the links to the WordPress stuff are helpful as well. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us as we try our best to talk about this without being domain experts whatsoever. Maybe one of the things we can do, Brian, is have somebody on once this is going into going into core and whatnot, get somebody on that's been working on it and talk to them about it. I'd love to do that.
That would be awesome. If you know more about this than us and want to talk about it, please reach out so that we can make sure to invite you to join us on the show.
And sounds good.
Yeah. I also want to echo thank you for joining us today on our episode of the Post-Status Draft. And if you'd like even more high-quality insights from Post-Status, you should definitely check out poststatus.com/club because that's where all of the most interesting activity is happening, in my opinion.
And WP Sessions is coming up, huh? You got any announcements coming up for it?
Yes. So we just yesterday had the session with Zach Gordon on running on developing for Gutenberg. That was awesome. A really good introduction to his broader course. And you can check that out at wpsessions.com. Next month, we're talking about local development and a really slick tool to help with that called Lando. And then, of course, coming up in July is the next Word Sesh. And speaker announcements have been getting published all week long. So if you go to wordsesh.com, you can see some of the fantastic people who have agreed to speak at this year's event.
Excellent. So far, you got Mike Little and Carrie Dills on the board.
That's right.
That'll be exciting. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.
Bye, everybody.